tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my years, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic and my name is James. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or distract people. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. If everyone's ready, we're going to start the meditation and bring in the monks. We're going to say the fog light prayer. Normally we have it up on a screen. If you don't know it, you can mumble along. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Roger to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. Let's just welcome Roger.
Hi, I'm Roger, alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book. which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance and belligerent denial. We find that no one need to have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. Quote, there is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Unquote, Herbert Spencer. Alcoholics Anonymous, pages 567, 568. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. Peter is on his seventh, something like that. I apologize for not remembering. And again, thank you for everyone for your grace and patience while we don't have our normal setup here. Let's welcome up Peter.
My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Before we get going, we had to move over here, obviously, and I just want to thank James and the rest of the trusted servants for making this quick shift and getting this place in gear. So if we can just give it up for those guys. I used to live 2 minutes from here, and I forget when it rains down here, all hell breaks loose. Everything floods, and we had a Fellowship of the Spirit conference 1 year, and it rained, and the air conditioner blew out, and we had to move in here again. What's interesting about this room, this chapel, a little over 2 years ago, my wife and I got married right there, and so it was kind of neat walking here and seeing some friends who paid me a surprise visit. And the church at the time for our wedding, I mean, we could have read the preamble instead of taking vows because it was full of AAs. And the cool thing was my dad was sitting right there that day. He had his walker, and he suited up and showed up as sick as he was. It was a special day. So it's good to be here. June 23rd, 1988 is when God gave me a sober date, separated me from alcohol. I didn't quit drinking. I didn't decide to stop. I was kind of surrendered on that day, June 23rd of 88. It wasn't a day I saw coming, nor did I plan on. But God kind of interrupted my death like he's done with almost everyone in this room. Marion always said something I think is simple and profound. The day before, I'm drunk, and the next day, I start a journey of recovery, and I didn't see that happening. that this profound alteration, the thumbprint is put on us, and we have no idea the road we're about to embark on, but little by slowly it starts to change, and the point of view on life changes, and little by slowly what this God does in his way, in his time, is, as I've said many times from these podiums, is close the ears to the mind and opens up the ears to the soul. And when that happens, we're hearing and seeing and behaving completely different. We're seeing what we never saw before. We're seeing what the beyond the eyes, what the eyes see. And we're hearing beyond what the ears hear. Now, I don't have the ability to do that on my best day. And when we talk about defects or shortcomings, it's the same holds true. I don't have the power, the insight, the ability to erase defects of character. And further, I don't have the ability, the power, the insight to have what Thomas Merton talks about, this spiritual renewal, this spiritual regeneration. It's impossible. And I can work on defects and try to practice the opposites and try to do good today. Remember, these are my defects. I'm not going to act out. And basically, it's holding my breath because I'm going to cave, because I'm using me, the power, which is basically none, to overcome something so great. And when I look at defects of character, Polly P., my wife's sponsor, says something great. We look at greed, we look at lust, we look at anger, we look at envy, we look at all those things, and she says, we're not drinking, but we are, because we're taking a drink of greed. We're taking a drink of anger. We're taking a greed of lust, because that's what it comes down to. I have alcoholism, not wasm, and my alcoholism doesn't come in a bottle of whiskey. So for me, it was a long journey of stretching and growing and coming to terms with how easily, left untreated, my woundedness, if you will, my brokenness, becomes my storyline, and I inflict that upon you. And sometimes I'm not even aware I'm doing it. I'm just not good to be around. You're uncomfortable around me. Or here he is again, his tales of woe, or the self-pity, or the anger, whatever it might be. I make people uncomfortable when I'm left untreated. And I get so attached to living that way, it really becomes my storyline. I start to live my story rather than the life God is willing to give me, a full and abundant life. And that doesn't mean I'm going to have a whole bunch of money and property and prestige, but the inner condition has changed. I've been made new from the inside out. I never want to be the guy on my first fourth step. I don't want to be the guy on my last fourth step. But if I don't go to God with the surrender, really for me, is a thread that runs through all of this work, especially 6 and 7. If I don't make a daily surrender, surrendering, willing to have God whatever he wants with me, that stuff will come back. And the only difference between having 1 year sober and 36 years sober, I can disguise it a little bit better. I can front a little better. I know what to say when I walk into a meeting. I know to smile now because I'm in an AA meeting and pretend I'm Moses, but I was Rambo on the way over here, yeah? Because this thing called alcoholism gets a life by taking mine, and I got to be real careful about that. Careful awareness, the greatest agent for change. Aware that something's not right, I'm not okay. Aware that if I rely upon me, I'm relying basically on nothing. Now the ego wants to get in and says, we got this, we know what we need to do. Now I love mechanics. I still do. I've been brought up on mechanics. I still write inventory. I still share inventory. I still do tons of reading and all of that stuff. There comes a point where I can fall in love with doing. My sponsor talks a lot about this, in doing rather than experiencing, gathering up more information. If I write this inventory enough times, if I write it perfectly, if I get my columns right, somehow these defects are going to just vanish. It's not about doing at this point. I mean, we have to do some things, but it's about the spirit of surrender. God, you take me like the wretch I am, and wherever you send me, I'm going. What you want me to say, I'll say. What you need me to do, I'll do. It's not on my terms anymore. When we look closely at step 7, it really is step 3. It's an extension of step 3. It's written a little different, but it's another reminder that my life is none of my business, and God has got me in spiritual shape to go work with others, to take these principles into all our affairs. I mean, athletes show up for spring training. Nowadays, athletes are pretty much in shape all year long, but they show up for spring training in baseball for a reason, to get the timing down, to get the swing right, to get the arms in shape, because on day, when the season starts, they need to be ready. What we're doing here is kind of getting in shape as I'm moving through the steps. God's cutting away things I think I need, but I don't. And sharpening tools I don't think I need, but I do. So by the time I enter the world of the Spirit, I'm cleaning up the wreckage of my past. I'm ready to not only sponsor people at this point, but I'm ready to go out there and be a living example of this God, which is what I'm supposed to be doing. Leading with God rather than leading with fear and paranoia. It says we're agents for God. I can't be AA angelic in here and then out there I look like a thief or sound like a thief. I need to lead with God. I need to be an example of this. I cannot do that if I'm loaded up with me. It requires a mustard seed of faith here to get going. And this faith gets cultivated. It comes into trust. And the cool thing about faith, and I really thought about this a while ago, it came to me. Sometimes people ask, how could you believe in God you can't see him? And people say, I have faith. And the logical person will look to rip that apart. The thing about faith is, I don't need proof. I don't need documents. I just know. And even if I'm wrong, okay, but I'm willing to believe in something I can't see. I'm willing to believe in these 12 steps even though I never walked them. You did it. You see it to be okay, but I never did. I don't need proof. And faith, in a sense, brings death to the need for proof. Ask any ones on a spiritual path or a Christian, any religious person. There's a big chunk of faith in there. When I die, I hope to go to heaven. What's that? I can't explain it to you. I don't even know the location, but I just know there's something else. How could you say that? I have faith to the point where I have trust. I believe it. And I will stand for those beliefs, not argue with anyone. There's no need to argue for God. He doesn't need my defense. I will stand for those beliefs, yeah? I will make it clear as to where I am when the invitation's there, because if I stop talking about what I believe in, I'll stop believing in it. I had a sponsor, Mark Houston, he said, never let anyone else read your big book for you. And what he meant by that, don't let someone take your big book and water it down to where you're not doing anything anymore. Just get a couple of little nice little sound bites that sound really profound when I'm sharing, but I'm not doing any of it. And over and over and over again, what God has done for me, and at one point in his journey, I thought God was being punitive. It's about taking down in order to build up. If anyone works out in here, when you weight train, when you lift weights, you're actually breaking the muscle down. And when you rest, it heals. And when it heals, it gets bigger and more shapely. That's working out. The same thing happens for me on this spiritual journey. God's going to break stuff down. All my ideas, attitudes, and beliefs about life, about him, about everything. The whole structure needs to come down. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, yeah? And what he'll do as he dismantles it, he will build it back up again the way he wants to. And this is why my life is none of my business, because if I'm orchestrating all of that, I look like the Leaning Tower of Pisa now. It's a building, but it's tilted the wrong way. And God's looking to do something that will wither any storm. It's built on bedrock, not on sand. Any storm that hits, it's going to stand strong. And the storms of life, quite frankly, people, places and things, because they're going to come. If you knew, they're going to come. You know, people we love will die. People we love will leave us. Jobs we love will go south. The money we like to have, we won't have any. Yeah? I've experienced all of that stuff. But if I'm locked in with God, we might bend a little bit. We go right back again. And the first place we go to is a meeting, because we know this is soul food. I remember when 9/11 happened, I was in Atlanta. I was working and I was supposed to be there for a few days. In the morning of 9/11, as a lot of us know, hell broke loose. And I went back to my hotel and the cell phone service was out. I didn't know what to do except one thing. I found a place called the Triangle Club somewhere in Atlanta and I went there. And there was a bunch of people at a meeting and we were all scared to death, but we met together with a common problem and a common solution, and we prayed. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I belong. I don't need to be out there solving the problems of the world. God will do that. I just need to be a follower of him, yeah? I need to be a follower of him. I don't have God follow me. I need to tell God, listen, you're not paying attention, God. I got a better script. I've done that. God, listen, I got a really cool plan. I'm going to be rich and famous by the time I'm 40. Get to work. It's been the opposite, quite frankly. So my prayers have been for years now. And the ego tries to get in the way of this. Instead of going to God and tell him what he needs to do for me, it's me going to God and say, what do you need from me? What do you need me to do? What am I supposed to do today? Tell me. And so one of the prayers, I've said it earlier, is, God, I'll go where you want me to go, do what you want me to do, say what you want me to say. Now, I would love to tell everyone in this room, you're looking at someone who does this perfectly and flawlessly. That's a lie. I stumble and fall over my own feet. It's not the big boulder I have to worry about. It's a little pebble. And I will make that a boulder. I get my own way. And God must just laugh at me. There he goes again, trying to run the show. But he kind of knows that, because my condition, my going around condition, is one that's broken and flawed. And there was a time on this journey in early recovery, I thought if I go through the steps and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I won't be broken and flawed anymore. I'll be like Teflon. I'll be bulletproof. And then the rude awakening is that that's not happening. My broken and flawed condition, I got to a point where I freely embraced that. Not use it as an excuse to keep stumbling, but the broken and flawed condition is cool because that's how he designed it, yeah? That's how he designed it. It's a greater need for God. It's a greater need for Alcoholics Anonymous, greater need for this big book. It is, we've heard it many times, the treasure map. It's not the treasure. I've worshipped the book. I love the book. I don't worship it. I worship God. This is a treasure. I can go. My sponsor said this many times. You go to a restaurant and you study the menu. And you do that for 90 days. And after 90 days, you know what's on the menu. You have to look at it. But you never order. And you leave the restaurant hungry every day. So what I need to do is not only study the menu, but call the waiter and say, I'd like to eat. So I can study this treasure map till the cows come home. There's a lot of folks who, they know the sentence and they know what Bill had for lunch on Tuesday in 1943. And they'll slam you over the head with their concept information and traditions. They'll just beat you to death with it. That's wonderful. I'm impressed. But I don't want to have coffee with you because you're a wreck. And you don't want help. So the process of recovery for me is about getting information to have this transformation, this spiritual revolution, this huge spectacular upheaval. And I do that not by adding on. God didn't tell me you need more stuff, but what he does is you need to remove everything. The process of recovery is subtraction, never addition. God didn't shortchange me or anyone in this room, quite frankly, or anyone out there. The belief system is if I acquire enough stuff, I will arrive and everything will be okay. All my ducks will be a row. I'll be gone. And then I get that stuff and I take me and my money into a higher tax bracket and I still have the same problems. Because defects aren't impressed by money, property, and prestige. In fact, they will work in that. The thing about the ego, it'll get me where I think I'm doing good. I don't know if I shared this last week or not. If I did, forgive me. Thomas Merton talks a lot about how defects are running the show and we're completely unaware of it, but we might start to feel the effects of it. Fear is a great example of that. So you'll get John or Mary who comes to the meeting and they're in great shape. They're just chiseled. And they got that tan and the clothes fit good and they're just in fabulous shape. You say, my God, how do they do that? They eat good, they sleep good, they work out a lot. And then we sponsor one of these folks. And we find out, as we're sponsoring them, they're not working out for physical fitness and because they enjoy it. They're working out and eating like that because they have to. Because if they didn't, they would feel like an empty shell on the inside. They have to. It's their God. We see John and Mary walk into a meeting and they always have oodles of money. And when you speak to them, they have two jobs and a lot of businesses. And you say, oh my God, that's very impressive. I need to be more of a go-getter. I want to do that. Then we sponsor John or Mary and we find out what's really going on. Greed owns them. They could have 50 businesses, it's not enough. They could have 3 cars, it's not enough. It's about acquiring more, because if we remove those bandage of money, property, and prestige away from me or from them, there's nothing left. Merton even talks about, even if we acquire that stuff and live a ripe old age of 90 years old with those bandages, the day is going to come when I'm about to take my last breath and realize all that stuff means nothing, and I missed the real show. And that was about packing into the stream of life and connecting with other people. Because at the end of the day, that's what this is about. A couple of friends just came from Jersey. Haven't seen Charlie in a while. He walked in. I haven't seen Roger in a while. He walked in a room. It was a breath of fresh air. To me, that's living. That's life. I was so happy to see these guys. And we can see each other every 6 months. It's like we had lunch yesterday. That's a godly thing. And I don't have defects in the way to prevent me from doing it. How do I look? How do I sound? Oh, my God. I owe an amends. So for me, it was this journey through the work. I couldn't just show up on step 6 and 7 and, okay, God, zap me. I couldn't get to 6 and 7 with my little list of defects. And it's good to have a list of defects, get an idea. You know, coming out of 5, what my trouble spots are. I'd say, okay, I got these 10 defects or 5 defects or 20 defects. And so, okay, got them, and I'm going to work on them. God, I just need a little help, a little push, but I got this because I see where I'm greedy. I'm going to stop being charitable. And that lasts about 5 minutes, and I don't want to give my money away. Or I'll pass up a homeless person. I have a fistful of money in my pocket, but I don't want to roll down the window and give them a $5 bill or a $10 bill. It's too much. Well, what happened about being charitable? That just left. But if God's guiding my life, I'm going to give them a $20 bill because I can make 20 bucks tomorrow. I have 20 bucks in the bank. And this person, what they're going to use it for is none of my business, but it's a child of God I'm looking at. I need to do stuff like that. My wife and I do that often. I remember on Sunrise and Andrews, there's like a Walgreens or something. And I used to work in Hollywood, and I went into Walgreens or CVS, whatever it was, to get some stuff, and there was this homeless woman. And I looked at her, I said, oh my God, she's not that old. She can be like somebody's mom or maybe grandmother. And she was just a train wreck. And all I had in my pocket was a $20 bill. I was like, now I can say that's too much to give to this person, or I can give it to them. Here it is. I'm live. I'm going live now. I had a job. I was gainfully employed. I was making decent money. I can go to the ATM and get a few 20s for myself. And I gave her 20 bucks. She started running around the parking lot, praise the Lord. She was yelling out loud, you know, and you're a disciple of God. She's telling me, I didn't need that much attention. But whatever she did with that 20, it certainly made at least part of that morning for her. And I'm sure God said, well done, my faithful and trusted servant. To me, Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten not away from book for me, but putting this book live into things like that. How am I doing? And the thing about being charitable, Merton talks about this as well, it ends the self-involvement, the self-love, the need to make sure I'm okay before you're okay. Being charitable. And when I'm going to God to remedy these defects of character, the cool thing is I can quickly use either my accomplishments of the past or the heartbreaks of the past to define who I am with you tonight. I can't do that. They were just events. I like to think who I am with you tonight is what God wanted. And these things just happen. whether they're wonderful times or heartbreaking times. It's just part of the journey. No one's immune from that. It's going to happen. Taking a look, I just want to backtrack a little bit at step one. When I first come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm thinking step one has to do purely with drinking and taking non-conference approved drivers. That's step one. I stay away from this stuff and I'm okay. And then my sponsor takes me to page 62, which is really what I'm up against, me. It has nothing to do with drinking on page 62. I'm the problem. Sober, I am a problem. I'm a problem for me. I'm a problem with others. My ego says, you're wonderful. You got 90 days, you're gold. You got 1 year, you're gold. You got 5 years, you're gold. I'm not. I have no spiritual muscles. One of the things that troubled me was when I was a little guy, it's kind of step one stuff. I was being touched inappropriately from like ages 8 to 10. It was awful. And this man was what I would call an alpha male. Into sobriety, I was still gun shy around alpha males. I was petrified, quite frankly. They intimidated the heck out of me because there was something back here saying, they're going to hurt me. And I don't have, I felt weak. I don't have the ability to fight back. I was petrified of my dad, and a lot of outside help helped me with this. My dad was the alpha male. I look in the dictionary, alpha male, my dad's picture's there. I was terribly afraid of him growing up, petrified. So what that did, that hampered relationships because I'm operating out of fear here and trying to compensate for this fear. It affected a lot of areas of my life because these defects, these shortcomings have tentacles. And they go from here to there to there, and suddenly I'm surrounded by all of it. And I'm falling into a bottomless pit here, and I don't know what to do. So I had to take a look through more inventory as to exactly what's going on here. And one of the things I came up with is, I cannot fix it. Well, that puts me between a rock and a hard place. I want it, I can't. I tried, I can't do it. I would walk into my old home group in Brooklyn. There were a few alpha males there. And I'd walk in and I'd say, okay, I'm gonna be an alpha male tonight. You know, I'm going to do the Brooklyn thing they do in Brooklyn. You know? And curse a little bit and that whole thing. And I walk into the room. I'd sit down, have a cup of coffee. I'm not talking to anybody. And they come over, hey, kid, what's going on? And I crumble. I was not successful at working this stuff out. And when I ran out of road and went through the steps again, it was about on bended knees back to surrender. Father, I surrender this to you. You do with me as you want. This is killing me. And that's where I start to experience God's mercy. Some of us, when it comes to defects of character, it's this thing of this fear of intimacy. We hear a lot about this. I sabotage a good relationship and I'll nurture a bad one. That's very sick and twisted. I get it. I did it. What's going on there? I'll tell you what. If I'm in a good relationship, I might have to be a lot more transparent than I'm comfortable being with, and we're not going to go there. So I'll just get out. The other piece is, I've been burned once before. They're going to burn me, so I might as well ruin it now. And I'm operating out of old voices. I'm operating out of the past. How could I live now when I'm operating like that? It's painful. It's lonely. It leads to isolation from God, from you. And what I do to compensate, to deal with this isolation, this restlessness, this contentment thing, well, before I pick up a drink, I'm going to start to do things like sex sprees and food sprees and money sprees and gambling sprees. I'm going to do something. At the end of the day, there's a double vodka. That makes everything go away for a little while. The problem is I need another double vodka. And the trick goes right back to me getting drunk again. So I didn't realize how deep the roots are when it comes to alcoholism and talking about defects of character or shortcomings, how deep those roots are, and they're incurable by a human's hand, by my touch, by my even willingness to work on them. I'm not going to make a dent, but God could and would if he was sought, yeah? The other thing I've learned about defects is, I had a lot of guys come to me and say, I've been praying on this, it's not going. My question is, do you want it to go? It makes me look good in front of God. God, remove this. See, I'm such a good Christian, such a good AA. I told God to remove it. But secretly, I don't want it to go because I'm so afraid what's going to happen to me. If this thing gets removed, what happens to me? I kind of like a little of the fringe benefits of this defect, too. I could always claim I'm alcoholic and sick, and this is why I am the way I am. Do I really want it to go? How free do I want to be? Do I want to get past where I currently am, whether I'm sober 1 year or 30 years? Do I want to get past here? Do I like the effect produced by God? Yeah? So the roots run deep. And I had to touch that. Most of the lessons I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, even in life, has been by me running out of road. Insisting on, I got it, I'll try it one more time, and then it gets just too painful. Whether the consequences are mounting up and they're getting great, or it's just that pain in the soul. Remember right before we get sober, that feeling we were feeling? We're just like a non-person. My life's in shambles, whether it's Park Avenue or Park Bend. It's that thing in here. It happens with defects as well. I can't do this anymore. I'm done. The big shot is, it's got to go. I like to be a humble guy like Joe in the back. I don't even know where to start. That statement, I like to be a humble guy like Joe in the back, is a statement of humility because I'm not looking at me anymore as the guy who has the solution. When I did my fourth step, a whole bunch of stuff was revealed. The first time, as recent as the last time, less stuff the last time. But the very first time, it was a rude awakening. First reading this in step five, which kind of crushes the ego when we're doing a fifth step. Admit to myself and to God, I do that alone. No one's hearing it. To another human being, the ego gets stepped on pretty good, which is needed. But I would hear myself talking to my sponsor in step five about some of the stuff and the harms caused and where that was the root cause, where this was being generated from. I wasn't real happy to hear this. That fear pretty much owned me. The 100 forms of fear the book talks about, a lot of fear. I can pretend to be, I got it together, I can pretend to be tough, but I'm really dying on the inside. I'm like an 8-year-old kid in a shopping mall who can't find mama. And I'm running around screaming in a panic. I'm doing this like in a 30 and 40 year old body. The need to be perfect, the need to have control is all because I'm in such great fear. Think about God, he always wins. Our book says we're going to outgrow fear. In inventory, so we outgrow fear. Is it possible we grow into fear? You know, when we're little ones, most of us, I can't say all, most of us, when we're real little ones and mama's in the house or mom and dad are in the house and we have a stable house, you're not worried about the rent or the, you know, anything like that. Maybe the boogeyman when you go to sleep at night, but you're not running around in fear. But something happens maybe around 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and so on. Suddenly fear shows up. We touch the ego. We come in contact with fear and that becomes our master. And here comes a lot of other heartaches and pains and struggle. And the reason why I'm struggling is because I want to take control. So I do this fifth step and I come out and they have some promises in step five. I said last week that a lot of these fifth step promises didn't happen to me till later on. They didn't happen right after five. I got done with five and I was pretty much just relieved that I got this heavy lifting process done with. I felt like I was a part of the team for the first time. But there was more work to do, and I got this hour quiet time. And it was about me being alone with God, which can be uncomfortable when we're new. Especially nowadays when youngins are coming in bombarded with social media. It's like the phone is attached to many of us. We're not talking, we're online. We're on social media. Even when we're talking, we're on social media. You know, you're looking at someone, yeah, really, that really happened? Oh, is that right? And you're looking at your phone. Youngins are coming in. I mean, they've been bothered with this stuff. They don't know how to get quiet for an hour with no interference, no stimulation, no nothing. And the book is requiring that. There's a reason for that. So God can get me alone and maybe reveal some things to me that I'm unaware of. My grand sponsor say he gave me a prayer. God, please reveal to me what I'm unaware of before it gets to me and kills me. Because even though I've done a thorough fifth step, there might be things that I'm still not aware of. I didn't hear God. I missed it. So I reaffirmed that with him. And I come out of step five. After that hour quiet time, I review what I've done. I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know him better and things like that. It says I'm at step six. There's a great line in here in step six. It says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step six. It doesn't say check in with the sponsor here. The book is assuming we have fertile ground we're standing on, that the Spirit's been awakened. It's between me and the boss. That I can honestly ask myself, I've been thorough here. And the questions they're talking about are on the bottom of page 75. I've been thorough. I didn't try to sneak something in or leave something out. It says this. Am I now ready to let God remove from me all the things which I have admitted are objectionable? That I learned in five. You know those glaring defects. Am I willing to have God remove them? I don't like them. Yeah. Can he now take them all, every one? Do I believe my God's big enough to do this? If I don't believe my God's big enough to do this, I don't need a bigger God. I need a smaller me. Which means I might have to revisit some of this work again. Really take a look at what I've done with my life on my own power and what God has done for you with his power. That'll put me right back in the saddle. Can he now take them all, every one? Do I want him to? If I'm in a place of, I'm a little nervous about this, it says we pray for willingness. We pray until it comes. And if that doesn't work, maybe write some more inventory. But the thing I have to be doing is a surrender and another surrender and another surrender. Whatever God wants to do with me. It says if I still cling to something that I won't let go of, I ask God to help me be willing. I did that. I did that with trust. You know, coming to AA, trust God, clean house, help others, trust others, share with others. Everyone's talking about, oh, I love my sponsor, I trust my sponsor. I said, I like my sponsor. I trust him to about here. But I'm not giving it all up. And step five says you got to give it all up. And I don't blame my upbringing for this, but when I was brought up, my dad and my uncles and my dad's friends would have some of these slogans they would talk about. Do the right thing, smarten up. But one of them says, never trust anyone. The only thing you trust is the money in your pocket. And trusting people, being vulnerable, was a sign of weakness to these people. So that kind of gets embedded. And I come into AA, they said, no, trust. No, I'm not. Because if I tell them, that's information they can use against me. It's wimpy. It's sissy to sit with another man and say, I feel afraid today. That's not good. I wasn't brought up. Now I do it. I wasn't brought up that way. I was afraid to do this. I knew someone was going to get me. No one got me. No one hurt me. But it was a surrender. God, I'm stuck on this. I'm petrified for you to take all of this from me. I need to be a willing participant on this journey. My step seven says this. When ready, it says we say something like this and it gives us a seven-step prayer. There's a gentleman from California. He's passed on. And he said to me, when is ready? I didn't even see that. I read it a million times. It says, when ready, we say something like this. The question to me was, when do you know you're ready? Before we even do the seven-step prayer, when is ready? When I'm ready to have God remove all from me all the things I consider objectionable. When I'm willing to let go absolutely once again. When I'm willing to have God do whatever he wants with me. Because it comes down to this question, based on what I've done with my life, how's that working out for me? You know, I still toss and turn at night. I don't sleep good. I have impending doom. I'm walking around that undercurrent of impending doom. I have a lot of skeletons in the closet, or I just can't get sober. Isn't it funny? I did it. You're sitting in an AA meeting, you got like 30 days back for the 100th time, and Jody old time or Mary old time gets up there with 40 years and telling you how they did, and you're going, this guy doesn't know what they're talking about. Start taking their inventory. I did it. Guess who kept getting drunk? Me. When ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I am now willing you should have all of me, good and bad. All of me." Sounds like the third step. What I think is good might be bad for me. What I think is bad might be good for me. It's none of my business. God, you take everything. I'm a really good businessman. You got it. I'm not a good businessman. You got it. I have a really good marriage. You got it. I have a bad marriage. You got it. It's none of my business. And the ego says, well, hold on, back up. At this stage of the game, we don't need to give up everything to God. Look at you, you're doing fine. Tell your sponsor you gave up everything, but we're not going to do that. We're not going there. I must go there. I'm going to walk on a road where there's no road. There's no path, I should say. There's a great, one of these Zen things. Students with the master on a snow-covered hill. And the master says, walk the path. And he says, there is no path. He says, start walking. When you look back, you'll find the path. Basically, go on faith. And when you get to your destination, you'll know how to get back. And then you'll know how to come back here. A path will be created. But you need to take the first step. I'm kind of going into this uncharted territory here. Is God really going to remove this thing that's killing me? I'm in so much pain over, I can't get past me. Is he really going to do it? How do I know unless I start with the surrender on bended knees for me? Your will, not mine, be done. I've left claw marks in a lot of this stuff. My Creator, I'm now willing you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. It's not about me. It's about God and being of service to him. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. I'm an agent for God now. That could be an AA. It could be a Publix. It could be in my family. I can't be an AA angel in a house devil. So for me, defects of character, you know, we talk about self-centered, self-seeking. I had a sponsor who kind of took me in another direction with this and had me look at the seven deadly sins as the real root of everything. I'm seeing through one of the seven deadly sins, and I'm hearing through one of the seven deadly sins, or all of them, which gives me bad vision and bad hearing, which means I'm making bad decisions. I'm saying the wrong thing. I'm taking inappropriate action. I hit the panic button and leap when I should be still. You ever see, we just had the Olympics. Those divers, how many of them, if you noticed, they take a look around, and a lot of them will either walk back and then walk up to the spot where they're going to die from, and they seem to take a deep breath and close their eyes for a moment. They're leaping out of the pause. They probably get up there and go, oh my God, there's a lot of people here. There's cameras, there's judges, there's my family. Who knows who's watching at home? Whoa, I want to go home. They take a breath, they take a beat, and they jump out of the pause, which is what I need to do, unless I'm unfit, and I'm just going to jump. And I land and say, this was a big mistake. Kind of like when you're drinking and you think she looks like Bo Derek and wake up next to Bo Diddley. I jumped too fast. Okay. So we have our seven-step prayer. Seven deadly sins. Pride. I put myself in the place of God. I worship me inwardly or outwardly. I expect you to do the same. I look at people as a threat to my security because they're not worshiping, giving me homage. I know what's right for everyone. I'm very cavalier about spiritual and religious things, even cavalier about God, because inwardly, I'm God. Now, I may not say those words to myself, I'm God, but my actions and my words prove that. I'm prideful, the mother of all seven deadly sins. It is a thing that needs to be dealt with. I can't. He can. Anger insists I'm right. You're wrong, I'm right. And the more I play it, I'm more right and you're more wrong. It's a roadblock to reconciliation. It's a roadblock to peace and love and understanding. If we watch the news, we can see what's going on. We got one of the two I can think of is pride and anger is running the planet right now. There's no reconciliation. I hate you, you hate me more. You drop one bomb, I drop three. And it never ends. I can do that sitting in my own on my own couch in my house. Envy. I count other people's blessings instead of the blessings God has given me. I want what you have, but I don't want to do what you do. I want to take from you. Leads to coveting. Inwardly, I'm walking around. How come they get all the breaks and not me? After all, I'm great. How come they didn't ask me to speak? They keep asking Joe over there to speak. Don't they know who I am? It's envy. It's kissing cousin is jealousy. Greed. An unbelievable amount of I want more. I have $1 million in a bank. I'm going to embezzle to get two. I'm going to lie, cheat, and steal to get two. I'm going to take from you. I have a person who's working for me, you know, 12, 13 hours a day. But the company isn't doing good, so I'm just going to cut them loose because I can save that money. And what am I going to do? Put a new deposit on my Ferrari with that money. That's greed. Corporations operate like this. Companies operate. It's greed. Gluttony. We all know what that one is. I go in the bathroom to puke to come back and drink some more. We OD, get right back in the saddle the next day, keep going. Gluttony. Need more of everything. More money, more sex, more drugs, more alcohol. Just, I'm getting sick from it. More food. I'm obese from it. And I keep putting it in. Can't get enough. Gluttonous. Sloth. You know, I haven't taken a walk around the block in about 30 years, and I have nothing wrong with me. You know, I wonder why I'm lethargic and lazy. You know, I'm just kind of laying around. I'm not taking care of the body God gave me. Then we have spiritually slothful. I don't feel like praying. I don't feel like meditating. I feel good today. I don't want to write an inventory. I don't want to call my spouse. I'll do it later. I feel good. Skip a few meetings, walk out on a meeting, leave before the Lord's Prayer. Spiritually slothful, it's a death sentence. Lust, I think I covered all seven. Lust, but we all know what lust is when we talk about lust. It brings infidelity, it brings broken hearts. It puts me in places I shouldn't be in. It's dangerous. But what about lust for power, money, and property prestige? It kind of saddles up right next to greed. I will step over people and do what I have to do because I need more, lust for power. You study history, there are maniac world leaders who had lust for power and they destroyed people in the process of doing it and thought they were okay doing it. Thought it was okay to do lust for power. You know, lust for popularity in AA. I want to be the man in AA. How you doing, Pete? And I get tell you where I'm speaking. That wasn't the question. They want to know how you're doing. You know? I want to walk into me and say, oh, here's Bill. He knows the traditions, the concepts and the steps in the big book. Let's bow down. We're not, but he expects you to. Well, she does. Lust for power in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I'm not behind this podium, oh boy, I don't exist. That's just trash. Because in God's eye, I'm okay. If I'm making coffee in the back or greeting or just sitting in the back of the room, God's cool with that. I need to show off in front of God. But when I'm going to lust for power, I need to be doing all of this stuff. I'm just really grateful. You're looking at someone who's very imperfect and broken and flawed and gets afraid sometimes. I turned 65 last month. 60 was a lot easier to get into than 65. My head starts to talk. I think I shared this with you. I had one afternoon where I was like, I'm on the clock. It wasn't a good day. And I'm trying to fight getting away from my head until I said, what am I doing? And I went to my meditation mat. Father, I'm in trouble today. I'm depressed. I'm afraid. I don't have a whole bunch of money. And I you know, that window's closing. Where are we going? And because I'm able to trust and have transparency, my wife read me perfect. And I says, this is where I'm at. And sometimes you just need to do that. The next day I was fine. But I had that thing. Fear showed up again. I tripped and fell. But I will say this. the silver lining. Even on a funky, kind of icky day like that, this head, because of the spirit, didn't say, you know, a drink would be nice. Nothing like that at all. I just knew I got to get back to him right now, and he'll do what he's going to do, however long it takes, but I need to get in there on bended knee. And for this, I'm forever grateful. So I think I'm out of time. That's all I got, guys. Peace.
Let's give Pete another round of applause. And we're going to have Ryan come up and do our secretary's report.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary.
Hi, Ryan.
Hey. In keeping with the Seven Tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the best which are now going around. I've asked Ryan to read the recovered statement, not me, Ryan. Ryan to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in AA identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. So let's welcome up Ryan.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic and addict. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. Page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. 1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder of those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither showed the sacred approach back into his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75%+ success rate. Does anybody need a sponsor? If you could raise your hand. If you're too shy, just come stand up here and someone will talk to you. Can the recovered alcoholics raise your hand? Awesome. So if your hand's not up, talk to someone whose hand is up. We have a couple announcements. Intergroup is where you can buy AA-related literature medallions. Intergroup is also responsible for creating our where and when and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. Broward County Institutions Committee is responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an AA meeting, such as jails, detoxes, and rehabs. They meet monthly to organize the meeting schedule at the 12-step house. Is anybody here from Intergroup or BCIC? Sorry. Up here and back there. So if you have any questions, talk to someone whose hand was up. Also, Monday nights in the building across the street, we have our Monday night big book study starting at 7:15 up on the third floor. We're actually getting ready to start back at the beginning of the book again, so now is a good time to come check that out. And then we'll have Peter for the eighth session next week, and hopefully be back in the building across the street again. So come check that out next week. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale. They're not over here, but if you need any of that, just talk to any home group member, and we can make sure that you get hooked up. And we meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15. We ask to be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thanks. See you next week.
Thanks, Ryan. We have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts at alcoholicsandgod.org. Again, if you're interested, come to the Monday night meeting. It's over in that church with the ACs working. And those who want to thank our tonight's speaker, you can line up down the center right here. Also, just quickly, if you brought any cups, bottles, cans, anything, like please remove it from you. We have to keep the church in pristine condition because they let us use this room. And we're going to say the Lord's Prayer seated. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come.
desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Accumulation. Yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. 'Cause they won't profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Shining through, but
crying. You bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
All right, Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Lifted, I see the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time right outside my door. Like never before, I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away, and it's just about to start. So I face each day brand new way, show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms, and here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. Lessons when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright. Oh man, going on 10 years old that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
This one, don't you? Hands right down to the bone. I work these hands
Yeah.